Welcome to the Audio Digest of the American Journal of Psychiatry. This is Dr. Susan Schultz with highlights for July 2017. They include a case of psychiatric complications in primary parathyroidism in an elderly patient. Our review article is about low-intensity transcranial electrical current stimulation for psychiatric conditions, and we'll also report 5-year outcomes of vagus nerve stimulation for treatment-resistant depression. Another study looked at brain structure and function related to suicide attempts in young people with bipolar disorder. And a population-based study sorts out endogenous and medication-related risk for diabetes in schizophrenia. We'll also feature a clinical trial of a novel treatment for social anxiety disorder, gaze contingent music reward therapy. This article has been selected as meriting CME for readers who subscribe to the AJP CME course program. Each month, brief companion exams are created for 3 articles from the issue. By reading the articles and completing the online exam, individuals can earn up to 1 AMA PRA Category 1 credit per article. This activity is sponsored by the American Psychiatric Association. To subscribe, click on the CME link at the top of our homepage, ajp.psychiatryonline.org. We'll start the July highlights with our clinical case conference. Kristen Parks and colleagues report on an 84-year-old woman with severe depression and psychotic features. She also had mild hypercalcemia and an elevated parathyroid hormone level. The findings suggested primary hyperparathyroidism, PHPT. The pathogenesis of psychiatric symptoms in PHPT isn't clear. Calcium is thought to figure prominently in monoamine metabolism changes in the CNS. Generally, the psychopathology emerges after a long period of subclinical hypercalcemia. In some cases of mild hypercalcemia due to PHPT, neuropsychiatric disturbances are the only symptoms. Severe hypercalcemia can produce catatonia, lethargy, or delirium with psychosis. It can even progress to coma. In younger adults with overtly hypercalcemic PHPT, the decision to treat with parathyroidectomy is straightforward. Advanced age can present a challenge to diagnosis and treatment. Neuropsychiatric symptoms in this age group are less likely to be attributed to PHPT. Often they're assumed to be due to normal aging or dementia. Psychiatrists have a unique opportunity to detect PHPT. They routinely order testing that includes calcium measurement when evaluating a patient's mental status and ability to take psychotropic medication. If hypercalcemia is detected, the cause can be investigated by measuring intact parathyroid hormone, calcium, and vitamin D. PHPT should be treated because its neuropsychiatric symptoms diminish quality of life, even with mild hypercalcemia. Our review article this month is about low-intensity transcranial electrical current stimulation in psychiatry. Interest in this approach has increased recently because it targets brain networks and it may have greater tolerability than medication. Noah Phillip and colleagues summarize the neurophysiology of therapeutic neurostimulation and clinical trial results for depression and other psychiatric conditions. The best known type of neurostimulation is transcranial direct current stimulation. Evidence supports its application for major depression, but the positive results require replication. Also, these devices don't have regulatory approval for treating medical disorders. For schizophrenia and cognitive disorders, transcranial current stimulation has had negative or mixed results. And some studies for people with substance use disorders have shown a higher relapse rate, more risk-taking, and heightened craving. Transcranial direct current stimulation delivered by experienced research teams has had a relatively benign side effect profile. However, a group of investigators recently published several concerns, such as the large effects of small changes in device parameters and the variable effects across different people. The perceived safety of transcranial current stimulation has led to direct-to-consumer sales and do-it-yourself kits. The greatest risk to users may be burns, but there aren't many data on the numbers and types of serious adverse effects. Clinicians need to know whether patients are using one of these devices in order to adjust prescribed treatment. One study found an elevated rate of conversion from depression to hypomania in patients receiving direct current stimulation in addition to sertraline. The FDA has approved vagus nerve stimulation as an adjunct in treatment-resistant depression. As a condition for approval, the FDA required a post-marketing surveillance study. A registry was established, and Scott Aronson and colleagues now report observations from the 5-year follow-up. It wasn't a randomized study, but two groups of patients were compared: patients receiving treatment as usual and those receiving treatment as usual plus vagus nerve stimulation. More than 800 were followed up. At the beginning of the study, all of them were having a major depressive episode, either unipolar or bipolar, lasting at least 2 years, or they had 3 or more depressive episodes. In addition, they had tried at least 4 unsuccessful depression treatments, including ECT. The primary efficacy measure was response rate. This was defined as a decrease of at least 50% in the score on the Montgomery-Åsberg Depression Scale at any point during the follow-up period. The 5-year cumulative response rate for the group receiving treatment as usual was 41%, compared to 68% for the group that got adjunctive vagus nerve stimulation. The latter group also had better outcomes in terms of remission rate, time to response, and duration of response. They also had lower mortality and suicidality rates. Next up is the clinical trial of a novel treatment for social anxiety disorder. Attention bias modification is a treatment that targets aberrant threat-related attention patterns in anxiety disorders. Patients with social anxiety disorder have increased attentional dwelling on social threats, providing a target for treatment with attention bias modification. Amit Lazarov and colleagues conducted a randomized controlled trial to examine the efficacy of a music reward therapy for social anxiety disorder. The treatment was designed to reduce attention dwelling on threats, and rewards were contingent on the direction of the patient's gaze. The trial included 40 patients with social anxiety disorder, many with comorbid diagnoses. They were randomly assigned to either gaze-contingent music reward therapy or a control condition. Earlier studies have evaluated attention to threat by using measurements of reaction time, but these measures have poor psychometrics and capture only indirect effects of attention. Also, some patients find the protocols tedious, which could reduce treatment engagement. In this study, the patient's allocation of attention to threat was measured by tracking eye movements when shown pictures of faces. Half of the faces had neutral expressions, and half had disgusted expressions, which were used to represent threat. The gaze contingent music reward therapy used a modified version of the same task. The treatment was designed to direct patients' attention away from the threatening faces and toward the neutral faces. Patients heard their selected music play only when fixating on a neutral face. The patients in the control condition heard the music of their choice throughout the session. The treatment or control task was given 8 times over 4 weeks. The patients who received gaze contingent music reward therapy had greater reductions in symptoms of social anxiety disorder compared to the control group. Reductions occurred in both self- and clinician-rated symptoms. The therapeutic effects were maintained at 3-month follow-up. Now we'll turn to the prediction of suicide attempts. Bipolar disorder is related to high risk for suicidal behavior that often develops in adolescence and young adulthood. Neuroimaging evidence in adult suicide attempters across psychiatric disorders supports involvement of structural and functional abnormalities in the frontolimbic system. Jennifer Johnston and colleagues combined multiple imaging methods to investigate abnormalities in the morphology and connectivity within frontolimbic systems in adolescents and young adults with bipolar disorder, with and without a history of suicide attempts. The participants ranged in age from 14 to 25. Structural MRI showed that the bipolar patients with a history of suicide attempts had significantly lower gray matter volume in the orbitofrontal cortex, hippocampus, and cerebellum compared to the bipolar patients without suicide attempts. These regions are implicated in emotion processing and regulation. White matter integrity was evaluated with diffusion tensor imaging. Differences between the suicide attempter and non-attempter groups were in the uncinate fasciculus, ventral frontal region, and cerebellum. Among the suicide attempters, left ventral prefrontal connectivity was negatively correlated with the lethality of attempts. Functional MRI revealed abnormalities in functional connectivity between the amygdala and the left ventral and right rostral prefrontal cortex. This connection is critical in emotional regulation, and it was significantly lower in the attempters during the processing of happy and neutral faces. We'll conclude with a study of diabetes in young people with schizophrenia. The two disorders may be linked genetically, but antipsychotic drugs are implicated as well. Anta Rajakumar and colleagues tapped into national registries to study a population cohort in Denmark to differentiate endogenous from antipsychotic-related risk for diabetes in young people with schizophrenia. The data included all people born in Denmark since 1977. They were followed up until 2013. Information on diabetes and schizophrenia was obtained from national registers of patients, prescriptions, and psychiatric treatment. People diagnosed with schizophrenia who'd never received antipsychotic treatment had a higher endogenous risk for diabetes than the general population. Patients treated with antipsychotics had a significantly higher risk of diabetes after treatment began compared with the rate before antipsychotic treatment. The risk did not differ between first and second generation medications. However, the rate of diabetes in people with schizophrenia who had received other antipsychotics further increased fourfold after they started taking clozapine. This concludes our audio highlights of the July issue of the American Journal of Psychiatry. Please visit our website, ajp.psychiatryonline.org, for the complete versions of these and other articles. We also welcome comments. They can be emailed to ajp@psych.org. Next month, our topics will include smartphones for self-care in schizophrenia, behavioral interventions in buprenorphine maintenance treatment, neurofeedback for depression, attention bias modification and cognitive behavioral therapy for pediatric anxiety disorders, and suicidal behavior during lithium and valproate treatment. We hope you'll join us. Thank you for listening.